Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Jenny Bill, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Welcome to Smallville, Kansas. Population 25,001. Creamed corn, capital of the world. At least it was in 2001. Find out more? Why not? It's Resonance Rewind.
Do you believe a man can fly? People can't fly, Lex. I did.
October 16th on the WB's New Tuesday.
It's the day of the meteor shower. This is how you came into our world, son.
What are you trying to tell me, Dad?
A small town on the edge of innocence.
Who's there?
It's me, Clark. I'm used to people judging me before they get to know me. I don't want anything to stand in the way of our friendship.
Sometimes people can surprise you.
We are the future, Clark.
A young man on the threshold of destiny.
We wanted to protect you.
Protect me from what?
Michael Rosenbaum, Kristen Crook, and Tom Welling.
We didn't find you, Clark. You found us.
The WB presents Smallville.
Well, that was the first one of over 200 in a 10-year epic 10-season scenario, which arguably paved the way for nigh on a quarter of a century of Warner Brothers' DC-oriented product, obviously building on the wonderful legacies left by Richard Donner and many others of the Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster magical creation of Superman. Of course, Smallville is what we're looking at now, and Jared Palmer, hopefully you've got some thoughts you'd like to share with us on what you made of this pilot episode.
Yeah, well, to kick things off, I've always wanted to watch Smallville since I was younger, but unfortunately I couldn't because of the age-wise. So when it was being shot at and filmed, I was still quite young. And I actually watched the whole series last year from start to finish, and the pilot was one of my definitely one of the best ones I've seen so far. And I would say overall, Smallville is... I would say it's my favorite superhero show so far due to how long it went on, but also the development, especially in episode one where you see a lot of the themes from Superman. You, of course, have Clark like discovering his powers and also having to deal with his dual identity of having to hide him from his friends. And also, I did like the idea with when the meteorites come down, that kryptonite also came down. So it gave... so that he wasn't too strong and he wasn't like too invincible, that there were ways to defeat him or ways he couldn't get around it. And of course, as you go into the show, other types of kryptonite gets introduced: red, blue, gold, and black. So yeah, but episode one was definitely, I think, one of the best pilots I've seen so far on a DC show.
Yes, of course, the fun fact, which I'm sure you're aware of, Jared, is that kryptonite was originally introduced not in the original comic books, but in the radio series, because the writers desperately needed to find something which gave this Man of Steel some fallibility and actually made the drama interesting. So it clearly went there. It's extraordinary. The first time we really encounter it here, of course, is when Clark is trying to pursue his... affections for Lana Lang, and of course she's wearing it in the form of a pendant. We also get to see an interesting take on how Lex Luthor became follically challenged, and again, unlike a number of other incarnations, including last week's Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, this is one which makes a great play of a young Lex Luthor and his daddy issues.
Yeah, I actually think Michael did a really good job on Lex, actually. When watching it, he just managed to emphasize how much Lex's problems he had growing up with his childhood, which the series does explain a bit. But it's also the chemistry he has with Tom is amazing, because I like the idea they started off with friends and then they were enemies. And then, of course, later on, spoiler alert, they unfortunately, that gets a raise and then like they become enemies. And I think for me, that I loved how they started that off with. And I did like the idea that in the first episode, Clark saves Lex and then Lex saves Clark. And then like between then, you have the dynamic. And I think also kicking back off with Jonathan's sort of like hatred towards Lionel due to what his Lex Corp's sort of ruination of his and his friends Pete's family's farm as well, because I think they were quite affected when Lionel bought a lot of the land in Smallville. And it was definitely quite interesting as well.
It's a classic case, really, of Mr. Deeds Goes to Washington, or the small, quite literally, American farmer and pioneer against the corporate corporations and big bodies, which, of course, we see echoed so often in current narratives in terms of how we're having to battle through, whether it's supermarket chains, whether it's other issues of commerce, purchasing of land, a kind of never-ending saga from that. We see one character, of course, here that is unique to this series and has no counterpart in comic book lore. I mean, Pete Ross obviously was Superboy's friend and has a noted comic book history. But the character who many fans have actually really rated highly is, of course, Chloe, played by Alison Mack, and, of course, her wonderful Wall of Weird.
Yeah, I think when watching it, I actually didn't think I was going to like Chloe, but I ended up liking Chloe as a character, and I was quite fascinated, like, where they got the character from, because I think for me, her character was quite interesting to start off with in the early season, and then it developed a bit more towards the later ones. Unfortunately, this is when I was watching Smallville, I did unfortunately find out what happened with Alison Mack and the whole drama behind that, which has put a bit of a negative spin, but I've tried to separate both of them as I can. But I still do enjoy Chloe on Smallville, but I do think that her relationship with Oliver worked better than Oliver's relationship with Felicity on Arrow. And I think that was the inspiration actually behind that, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, Arrow, another series kind of connected and yet not connected, really. This was not really part of the Arrowverse, although there was an indication that it could have been. I think clearly Arrow, and that's for another Resonance Rewind, was a series which was needed to fill the void, which many people felt would be needed when Smallville, after, say, 10 seasons, which was a significant length. Although maybe, as I say, in an era where Stargate SG-1, The X-Files also went on for 10 seasons, etc., it kind of became the norm for a time, as opposed to very short seasons and the streaming world in which we live in. Let's move on to characters, though, because there are a range of folk that you can actually choose here. I mean, you can go for the footballing jocks. You can go for the lightning character. I mean, I say lightning character, but the villain of the piece, the misunderstood teen who's simply actually seeking to get his own back. I did think at the time a somewhat harsh mechanism of actually crucifying somebody that you want to actually hold up as the scarecrow. I mean, there's obviously religious metaphors and overtones there, but I dread to think where you'd actually stand legally if you tried that in any situation today.
I think most likely you would either get suspended, fired, or even jailed for something like that.
And quite rightly so, it has to be said. But let's talk characters. Who for you actually were the ones, given that, of course, no Erica Durant's, the character of Lois Lane would take quite some time before she actually enters the Smallville universe. Who would you actually opt for your particular favourites?
I'd say for this episode, I'm going to have to say Lex. I did really like his introduction into the show. And I think from there, Michael like hooked me on with Luthor. Because when watching the other Luthers from like Batman v Superman and also the original Superman with Christopher Reeves, I definitely felt that Michael not only embodied that, but he also managed to develop like why sort of like Lex's sort of like hatred and his antagonism started to develop later. And I think for me as well, his relationship with Clark in the earlier seasons was very fantastic to watch, as when they both tried to help each other out and then eventually they sort of like fall out and then like they're sort of like reluctant allies and then eventually they turned enemies. But I think for this episode, I really did like how Lex was introduced and how they set him up really with Clark. So, yeah.
And of course, not just relationship between Clark and Lex, but the triangle with Lana Lang as well, played by Kristen Crook. Which also serves as a key point. I'm going to throw in Annette O'Toole and John Schneider. Annette O'Toole, of course, played an incarnation of Lana Lang in Superman 3 with Christopher Reeve. So she wasn't unknown in the Superman universe. And I suspect there was a connection in terms of putting her in the role, obviously, of Martha Kent. A more dynamic Martha Kent than perhaps we'd been used to seeing. I mean, even the Martha Kent incarnation that we saw in Clark and Lois, somewhat dynamic, but Annette very much in a younger version of that. And likewise, John Schneider, a much more virile farm type. And of course, unlike the original setting of Superboy, which of course Smallville very much borrows from, which was 1950s America, even though Superman himself was 1930s. So if you're being true to time, you would have set Smallville around about the second decade of the 20th century. But it did kind of connect the sort of images that we saw. And again, that obsession with American football tryouts, which even Clark Kent clearly wants to be top man on campus, big man on campus and so on. And is clearly even at that high school level, keen to actually show off his line, despite obviously his challenges within that. And I also like the fact that the actor who played the young Clark Kent had the surname Albuquerque. Malcolm Albuquerque, to be precise. I think that's quite an intriguing side of things from that perspective. And talking about younger versions, how did you feel Jade Unterman stood out as the young Lana Lang and her abracadabra, which, of course, she could probably be traumatised by, because was it that wish for abracadabra that effectively destroyed her parents and brought the meteorites down? It was a form of magic.
Yeah, it was an interesting take, actually, because Lana's relationship with Clark isn't as developed as it is within the other media as well. And I think this one was the home-based one, because I think a lot of people actually, even to this day, still wanted that relationship to go forward. And especially in the later seasons, they do take a different take with Lana. But I feel as if, to me, she was a good starting off point with Clark, especially with, with Bond, with like being the first love interest that like Clark falls in love with, but unfortunately has to give up for reasons during season 7's finale, and then eventually that course opens the door to Lois to come in and fulfill the Superman legacy. But she was a very interesting character on the show as well, especially her arguments with Clark and with Whitney as well in that episode.
Honourable mentions undoubtedly for Sam Jones III and his characterisation of Pete Ross. And let's not forget, of course, the truly villainous, nefarious Lionel Luthor, obviously played by John Glover, who maybe actually again demonstrates why there are problems within the Luthor household and so on. So who are you going to go for in terms of your top character then? Let's just confirm that.
Top characters, I'd say top three. So three for me would be, I'd say it would be Lionel for the third one. Second will be Clark, and then first will be Lex.
So there we are. Michael Rosenbaum's connection actually gets it. I'm sure he'd be delighted and pleased to connect with that. Okay, we're at that stage, Jared, where, as you know, this is being recorded ahead of the rest of the team joining us, and we'll find out where they kind of envisage this particular narrative going. I have a feeling it may be getting some interesting results. But what's your score out of 10 for the pilot episode of Smallville? As we said, a production for Warner Brothers, and directed by David Nutter, who had a bit of has indeed a bit of good solid genre history. I mean, he's involved with Space Above and Beyond, Game of Thrones, of course, a few other sort of areas that he's been involved with. Actually, he was just a year older than I am, so there we are. Anyway, there you go. In terms of that, that's the line. Where are you going to go in terms of your score out of 10?
I'm going to give it an 8.4 for the story and for the visuals.
You're never going to get anywhere with your eyes closed. Well, sage words. Well, we've heard what Jared Palmer thinks about Smallville. 21st century text. Has it got 21st century resonances as we head into the third decade? Well, I don't know. Let's turn straight to our New York correspondent extraordinaire, who, as she said last week, has a bit of an anti-thing about new television in the States in the 1990s. Maybe it's just a kind of bad time. But Pamela Suman, how are you? And what are your thoughts on Smallville Episode 1?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you, Alex. So, you know, this is such an education, because I have learned a good few things with all of you on Resonance Rewind. And one of those things is to try to see what we're being asked to watch through a historical lens. So in other words, if we get, you know, still you might get tripped up by thinking, oh my God, what bad hair, or what bad music, or, you know, something like that. Or, oh, I can't believe how sexist that is. But what I really tried to do with this, because also I love the director, because I love the Game of Thrones, and he's directed some of my favorite episodes. So already, David Nutter, already, you know, you have a thumbs up because you've seen their work in your in the later years. So with that in mind, I tried to see it through the lens of, what was it, 2001 was when it was made? Yes. So first of all, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was a long time ago, but it wasn't that long ago. So the things like the hair and the cinematography and the expressions the actors had were not, you know, offensive. but also I realized the acting was really good. The directing was really good. And David Nutter was 22 years ago or something like that. So he was younger to doing what he did. And that said, I found it much more watchable, if you know what I mean. And I really, like, so much so that I watched episode 2. And it was directed by someone else, but I actually watched episode 2. So I guess that's a good sign.
Yeah. Well, David Nutter born the same year as Robin Pierce, which is quite spooky in all sorts of ways. So let's turn to Jessica Burtis, who's back stable now after early in the day when I wasn't sure whether you'd be stable at all in this system. But that was another program, and it was a Women in Horror month, so that's all good. Anyway, Jessica, your thoughts on Smallville episode 1?
Yeah, it was nice getting to see another rendition of Superman that's just quite different from what we watched before. I think this is so cool getting to have a show focused on him growing up and kind of living in Smallville before he's kind of fighting supervillains in this big city. I think that it's something that's often overlooked in Superman movies. We're usually dropped in once he's kind of figured out who he is. So it's nice kind of seeing a smaller point of his life. So I really enjoyed it. I think, like Ms. Pamela said, I'm going to be watching episode 2 at some point. I will be, because I want to continue it just like the episode from last week. The season, it's just too interesting for me not to. And I think I'm also gaining a better appreciation for Superman. I've always viewed him as kind of a cookie cutter hero. There's not much going on with him. I feel like was how I perceived him. He was just perfect. So it's nice getting to see some more facets of his character and kind of get more interested in this very iconic superhero.
Where did you learn your manners, Clark? On a farm? Or where did you grow up? There were lots of sort of little lines that worked. I'll go to Kathy next, I think. But interesting enough, when I first saw this, my memory was, well, not so much memory, but I did feel as though, what we've got here is Dawson's Creek meets the DC Universe. And in many ways, if you were followers of Dawson's Creek back in the 1990s, there were elements there. But you're shaking your head, Pamela. You say it's better than that. Okay, fair enough. Let's turn to Kathy Mansour, because Kathy, of course, last week you were Miss Curmudgeonly and actually scored Clark and Lois The Adventures of Superman, or Lois and Clark, at a measly 5 out of 10. So has this improved?
Yeah, it's improved. First of all, let me take you on the journey that is Kathy's childhood. We're 15. We've gotten off the bus from school. We're the first ones to get home. And what do we put on? Smallville. Obviously, this was my show growing up. If you didn't know, this Superman was born in 1989. You know, when I was born, 91. That means appropriate dating age for this 15-year-old is what that meant, because this was my TV crush. So I'm already biased. I'm just going to say that. just going to be honest about it. Definitely love this show. I know it's cheesy. I'm not blind. I know, but it's the good kind of cheesy for me.
A good kind of cheese. Well, as we said at the start of the actual program, it was indeed Smallville, creamed corn capital of the world. So cream, corn, cheese, it all goes together, I suspect. Okay, Jenny, from your own perspective, is this one that you thought, that's interesting?
I know of the program, but I have never watched it before. And for me, it was like really, it didn't really have anything much to do with Superman other than the names. And so it was kind of enjoyable from the fact that it was just like watching a TV series that was just about some guy going through something a bit sci-fi. The thing that I'm watching at the moment, I'm watching Lucifer, And the guy that plays this Clark Kent is actually one of the main characters in Lucifer, but like 20 years old. And I've never seen him in anything else. And I just couldn't get past seeing him as the character out of Lucifer every time I heard. So obviously he looks much younger, but his voice and his eyes and that haven't changed at all. So that was the thing I kept thinking, oh my God, that's that bloke. And I was like on my iPad looking it up. What I did actually do is I did watch the second episode as well, because the first episode is only like 40 odd minutes, and I wanted to get a bit more of a feel of the there was a mistake because I didn't enjoy the second episode very much. Sorry.
Well, again, to be precise, we said over 200. There were, I believe, 217 episodes in total actually made of Smallville. It certainly proved to be a major hit. And as we said earlier in the program with Jared, it paved the way really for the Arrowverse and over 2.5 decades worth of Warner Brothers TV domination, if not cinematic. Stephen, you're up now. What's your thought on this particular episode?
I really love Smallville. I've only just finished a run through of the 10 seasons for the second time.
Something you have in common with Jared Palmer, actually.
Well, one thing I found with it, though, is it's very similar, especially that first season, to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's a bit creature of the week. The high school, where you've got Chloe's character and the paper, it's a lot like the library in Buffy. I like the series, but I think my favourite thing of Smallville, the pilot in particular, has to be Lex Luthor. He really did. He stole it for me.
Now, is that young Lex Luthor who loses all his hair when he's terrorised after seeing the...
Michael Rosenbaum, definitely.
Yeah. Michael Rosenbaum, holy, that sort of thing. Okay, Robin, time now to actually vent or otherwise in terms of your thoughts about this particular entry into our Resonance Rewind annals.
Let me tell you a little story. I remember this series starting off and I thought, no, I am not going to watch it.
Is that because it wasn't age appropriate, despite the fact that Alison Mack is a wonderful soul?
No. Nothing to do with that whatsoever. I wanted to make sure, before I committed any time to this, that the series ended properly. I didn't want the rug pulled on it and to be left on a cliffhanger. If I was going to commit any time at all to this series, I wanted to make sure that it finished in Metropolis with the suit. That is the only thing that would make me happy. So for years, I allowed my son to buy these DVDs and watch them as I saw the series being renewed season after season after season. And it just so happened, entirely coincidentally, that I wandered into his bedroom as he was watching the final box set, and I saw the final scene. And I saw the suit, I saw the flight, and I thought, right, okay, downstairs I went and conjured up an, South American river on my computer, bought the entire box set for a fraction of what he'd been paying for them for years. I am now on my second run through, so I guess I've got something in common with Jared as well, working my way through season 7 at the moment. But what struck me is, as Steve has said, and as we have agreed, it was actually kind of a replacement on the WB network for Buffy. And it echoes Buffy so much in that it starts off with Creature of the Week. There's always some kind of kryptonite-infected felon going around while dealing with Clark's sort of oncoming puberty and the development of his powers, like, a few episodes in, he develops heat vision whenever he becomes, interested. He has uncontrollable X-ray vision and, stop seeing himself, seeing through walls and stuff. So, it's Superman without Superman. And it's a long sort of drawn out but extremely satisfying look at Clark Kent, the person. And I've got to give special kudos to Tom Welling, because his portrayal, we can see this portrayal of young Clark Kent developing into the kind of bumbling Clark Kent that Christopher Reeve played so well. And he does appear in a few episodes. So do many Superman alumni. But more than the DC universe, the Arrowverse on TV, I would say that this gave birth more to Gotham. Now, if you watch both series, you'll see that as the characters they portray, they are the exact opposite of each other, because we keep seeing Smallville in this golden, nostalgic, Norman Rockwell-esque glow where everything is golden. You look at Gotham, and they never get a sunny day. Every day is bleak and dreary and, you know, makes you want to slash your wrist. And you can
it's
see
like
how...
living in Lincoln, isn't it, really? Oh, sorry, did I say that?
You can see how, you know, Smallville would give rise to a corn-fed superhero full of truth and optimism, justice, the American way, and how Gotham would give rise to an embittered, broken, emotionally distant orphan. You know, they are the polar opposites of each other, but they match each other so well.
Interesting take. Of course, I'm still recovering. It's taken me 20 years really to actually get the image of Clark Kent as a peeping Tom out of my mind with his telescope, obviously observing Lana. Not good, and quite frankly unwholesome, way before the hashtag MeToo message. But Kathy, again, from the point of view of how the show developed and proceeded, I mean, we don't really want to talk too much about that. Let's just take this particular episode. Did you feel that the characters were well established, that they were well developed? Did you like Chloe's Wall of Weird? Was that an early influence on you becoming a journalist, for instance?
maybe it sunk in without me knowing, but so rewatching it, because it's been a really long time since I've seen the first episode, so it definitely had to. It grounded me a little bit, humbled me a bit, because I remember so many major plot points of this show. But watching it from the beginning, I think they really rushed the, because they had to, right? We're focusing on the lifestyle of Superman as a teenager. And so they can only give us so much on the background of his, like, how did he show up? And I think without them meaning to make it comical, like, watching Lana's parents die was like more shocking than I remembered.
You will have a child who says abracadabra and waves a wand, obviously you're going to get bad things happening.
Right, obviously. So there were moments like that where I was like, ooh, didn't remember that. but either way, it sets you up with what to expect, and the show really does grow from here. I mean, I did exactly like everyone else. I went to watch the second episode because I was like, well, I'm in it, so here I go. But I think they really don't get a chance to show more depth about their characters until later in the season. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things where it kind of took a moment, but you were so captivated by the, you know, the idea of, oh, this is kind of, I still don't know about the Superman. You know, you're kind of figuring out who he is at the same time as he is, you know, and he's not what we know him to be. So you're kind of wanting to keep going because you want to see, well, how does he get there? And obviously Lex Luthor is a huge selling point.
And yet Lex Luthor's father, who was pretty much unknown in the comic book canon, beforehand, Lionel Luthor, in many ways tends to also steal the show. I mean, there were lots of references. I loved Chloe's line, or Alison Mack's line as Chloe, of strung up like a scarecrow, sounds like years of therapy waiting to happen. There were areas like that, which again, I think worked well. Plus, of course, that the nod in the direction of Friedrich Nietzsche, with, of course, Man and Superman being the book that Clark unfortunately drops because he's unwittingly being affected by the kryptonite in Lana's necklace. So nice touches like that, which I think deserve credit. Jessica, what about yourself?
I think just the ability to kind of make it have like such a, I don't want to say small as like a pun, but just like a very focused point of view in this little town. I think it's so, I don't know, I think small towns are charming in shows. I get that it's kind of idyllic. I don't know if small towns are quite like this, but I think it's so cute how they're portrayed. I think it's very wholesome. I feel like a lot of Superman tends to be very wholesome. But I think also like the dynamics between teenagers in this show is also an interesting point with the bullying that happens and how it pushes the students to extreme action as a result. I think that's a really important topic. And I feel like, I don't know how much, like over the decades, how bullying conversations have gone in public schools, but I think it's important to have it shown in shows. And I think Superman to me is always like the hero for the little guys and like the one who kind of stands up for the people being kind of trodden on. So I think that that was something that I appreciated in this show. While also I feel like it was a big warning for what happens to people when they're pushed very far by others in school. So I think it's very serious, but it's interesting to see it in a superhero show where usually the villains are so over the top and like, you know, they're larger than life, but this is a very serious thing that does happen. So I think that that was something that I appreciated.
That's a key reading. Out of interest, and I'll put this to Pamela as well in a few moments, as an American, is it a normal practice in school to actually crucify the weakest guy in a cornfield before a match is due? I mean, is the crows sort of standard operating protocol?
Can't say I've ever seen that. But, you know, I feel like kids like just being brutal to each other is something that's pretty worldwide. I feel like a lot of people have stories of seeing that in school. And I think that unfortunately it's something that's quite universal. But yeah, as far as going with this situation, I can't say I've ever seen that.
Pamela.
Same question?
Yes.
In terms of bullying in school, an American, well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, there. I don't know if you've ever heard of the word normative. I have a feeling that everyone here has. But I went to a small town. It wasn't called Smallville. It was called Milford. But a small town public school throughout all my school years. And it really did have that normate thing. I mean, obviously with television, especially if you get a bunch of superheroes to be or people with magical powers, you know, they're going to be a little more extreme and dramatic with their actions. However, you know, there are archetypes that are true, and there is the bully, the jock, that, you know, and it was very much alive and well in our school growing up. In fact, not to tell you too much about my life, but I mean, it all began. No, I mean, there were.
Residence Rewind is meant to be part therapy as well, Pamela. So it's perfectly understandable.
Kids that seemed to do the most interesting things were they were called quote unquote the theater fags, they were ostracized by others in school. I mean, it did happen, and looking back on it now, you know, it's stupid and horrible, and it just applauds normie culture, which, you know, we know that so many brilliant people that actually do brilliant things in the world were not the norm football jock, you know, in the school. But, you know, you don't know it in high school.
Kathy, as you once suggested to me that if you had gone to the same school as Pamela, you'd be sitting behind her and she'd be sitting in front of you. I mean, does that resonate with you?
Okay, so I went to a big high school because I'm from a big city. And I graduated with over 900 in my senior class. And my freshman class was 1,200.
Oh, we had 300.
Yeah. So I went to a big school. And with that being said, yes, there is forms of bullying. And I saw a lot of violence at my school. And I don't want to be too graphic about some of the violence I saw, but I will provide an example where one girl had to be taken by ambulance to the hospital because of how severe it was.
Yeah, you see, this is why I get concerned with gun laws in the United States, but that's another issue for another time. Jenny, relatively calm in, as one of the Stainsby girls' schools, basically, from your own point of view. Any connections on this side of things? Because obviously, in Teesside, they can get pretty tough.
Well, I didn't only go to school in Teesside.
You're a moving target, let's face it.
My parents moved around a bit, and I have to say I was very bullied as a child, very bullied at school, because I went to a lot of different schools. I didn't have any friends. I had really bad acne. I had curly hair and, yeah, terrible bullying. I was on the end of terrible bullying.
Well, you got friends now, Jenny, so
fact,
there we are.
In fact, I got to the point where I wouldn't go to school. I actually wouldn't go to school. Yeah. And first of all, I pretended I was sick, and then I would go out and I just wouldn't go to school. I'd just go and hang about in the town all day with other people. It was a big issue.
Okay. Well, Stephen, from your own perspective, this metaphor, I mean, we've gone from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to an allegory for antisocial behavior and more within the school systems of the United States of America and possibly indirectly Britain as well. Thoughts from your own?
Well, I like with the Superman character is, especially in Smallville, is seeing him as an outsider. Because when I was in primary school, at a young age, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. So I had to be taken out of different classes, and you'd have other kids asking, you know, what's wrong with him? Why does he have to miss? So I was basically getting the bullying side, the outsider side. So I could always understand where Clark Kent was coming from, because basically lived it myself.
Well, see, I was more of a Joe 90 identifier, but that says an awful lot about my own personal view, which I won't go into anymore at this stage. Robin, we'll be choosing favourite characters in a few moments, but anything you'd like to say as a kind of summation of what we've heard so far?
It all sounds pretty universal. I mean, I was an outsider at school, and to some extent, still am. You know, I back in about 66, 67, I was introduced to Batman as a comic book character. You know, there was a huge craze with the TV series and everything like that. The following year, all the kids I knew got into football, and yeah, a match would not hold my interest. Didn't matter what it was. And I truly, absolutely, horribly suck at sports. Badly. I was always the last to be picked. Absolutely always the last. And I'd be in like full back position and have no interest whatsoever. Somebody with a ball could walk, yeah, absolutely walk right past me. And I wouldn't even have the interest to try and pursue. Like, yeah, go ahead, whatever. When can I go to the library?
Yeah, well, there we are. Some drastic thoughts there. Jessica, let's move to characters. Which one stood out for you? Do you have a favourite one? Is there somebody that you'd particularly like to say, yeah, let's have some honourable mentions as well?
I mean, I feel like Clark Kent is the person in the show that I'm growing to like see as more than just this perfect superhero. And I appreciate it. He's my dad's favorite superhero. So it's nice getting to kind of see why he feels that way. So I think Clark Kent is just always my favorite. But I think like Lex Luthor is always interesting. So I feel like I have to give an honorable mention.
I'm going to probably actually go for Annette O'Toole on the basis that she has a lot of Superman legacy, having played Lana Lang, of course, the Kristen Croak incarnation, which we saw in this episode. Annette O'Toole was Lana Lang in, I think, Superman 3 in the Christopher Reeve era from that point of view. Okay, realize it could be a tough call. You might decide to actually surprise us and go for John Schneider as Jonathan Kent. I suspect not, but Kathy, are you going to stick with Tom Welling even a couple of decades after?
Okay, whoa, whoa, whoa. I take my job seriously here on Resonance Rewind, and I did consider this as we were leading up to this, so I knew the obvious choice would be Clark Kent, and I said nay, not today. First of all, honorable mention goes to baby Luther, specifically when they find him in the field, A plus acting. Like, round of applause for baby Luther. Yeah, like, shaking, shivering, he convinced me. Baby Luther has my heart. Now, and I do love Lex Luthor, but I like him when he's evil. So I got to wait for that. So my favorite character is actually going to be Lana. I was noticing a lot of the lines that she had to say, and like, I liked that she was emotionally intelligent, which is a skill that's really hard to like perceive or to really show when you're going through it. So I appreciated her character.
Interesting choice. I was surprised at that, but yeah, good one. And yes, what's not to love about nobody's mentioned, of course, Pete Ross, played by Sam Jones III, who together with Alison Max Chloe again were very much part of the trio of folk who have actually worked through that. Young Clark Kent, of course, played by Malcolm Albuquerque. I just think that the surname wins it for that point of view. And Matthew Munn played the young Lex Luthor. Okay, Pamela, who's your chosen one?
Oh boy, these are the contents of my brain. I think that's really hard because for me it's really about the magnetism that the actors had, and if I go based on that, I would say Annette O'Toole. She is so captivating. There's something about her that just makes you want to keep watching her. You know, at a moment, she kind of looked like Cate Blanchett in the beginning when she was a younger version of her. She's just, you can tell, again, as Kathy was saying, the emotional intelligence, you can tell there were some really, really smart actors on this. And even Tom Welling, I say even, because I still find it really next to impossible to believe that someone could be so absolutely handsome and drop dead gorgeous and also be really smart. I refuse to believe that a person has both attributes.
I believe.
Oh, that was loud.
I think, Alex, she has just called all of us either dumb or ugly.
I wasn't going to say anything, Robin, but that message does come across, certainly.
Wow.
Thank you, Pamela.
We're intelligent. I never said that any of you guys are intelligent.
Look, guys, we just got to be obvious here, and none of you can fly. So if you can't give me that, I don't know. What are we doing, you know?
Square jaw. And even the little boy version of him had the square jaw, and it's all over with the square jaw. But actually, David Bowie was both brilliant and beautiful. So yes, it can happen. And women too, of course. Although it's a lot more common in women, I think. But anyway, we won't go there. I think Annette O'Toole really kind of had my heart in terms of watchability. But they were all really great. Lex Luthor, see, in contrast to Kathy, I was hoping he wouldn't turn evil. Because I liked him. And then I found out the actor was Jewish. So I was like, yeah. You know, I was rooting for him.
I promise you'll like it.
No, I mean, I'm on to two now. I guess I'll go on to three. I will be continuing to watch it. I've asked Alex not to say anything, but I'm going to tell you guys anyway, because I can't keep a secret. I bumped my head on Jerry's mirror and I had to get staples in my head yesterday. So I can't do anything. I can't listen to headphones. I can't dance. I can't go.
Pamela, I've told you, leave the stunt work to Patricia Tolman. She's an expert at it. You know, Pat knows what she's doing. We're doing a superhero series on Resonance Rewind. You don't have, you know, there's a warning there. Robin will attest to this. Even when Batman was, you know, he can't fly. You've got to ease back on that.
Well, so suffice to say, I'll be watching probably the, you know, maybe not all 217 episodes, but I'll be watching this because I won't be doing much of anything else. But yes. What was I saying? I think...
It's like a living superhero scenario. We're still on favorite characters. Where are you going to go?
I'm just going to stick with Annette O'Toole because it's just easy at this point. And you can move on.
There were lots of wonderful shots. I mean, the one that I've actually just popped up on the screen, which we're using as a sort of placeholder for this on the podcast system, of Tom Welling, obviously, wandering through a graveyard in which he encounters Lana Lang as well at night, who's also wandering through a graveyard. I mean, honestly, does this thing happen, Jessica, in Charlotte on a regular time and in North Carolina? Or is that far bigger than Smallville?
A little bit bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, it probably explains a great deal from that point of view. But I did like the angel, almost a forerunner to the Weeping Angels for another series entirely. Jenny, who's your number one character?
I really like the parents. I actually really like the chemistry between obviously the two actors. But my favourite by a mile has to be Lex Luthor. And if this programme was about him and not Superman, it would be 100 times better, can I say. I thought that. I thought it was just the timing, the way he played it, was really smooth.
Stephen?
Gotta be Lex Luthor, definitely.
Okay, Michael Rosenbaum and yeah. Robin?
Okay, so Pamela did it, so I'm going to do it, okay? My least favourite character in this series is Jonathan Kent. I mean, absurd. He is the guardian, the legal guardian, parent figure to the world's most powerful superhero who wants only to do good. And yet whenever Clark does something, he goes home. It's, now Clark, did anybody see you take those little orphans out of the burning orphanage? What if somebody had seen? I mean, give the guy some support. Stop being a jerk, Jonathan. It's not difficult. Special mention to Tom Welling for his pre-Christopher Reeve-like performance, but absolute kudos in this. I'm not even going to mention that simpering line, who took me years to warm to. I mean, particularly in season one, I could not warm to that character if I was cremated with her. Anyway, my favourite character is Lex Luthor, particularly for Michael Rosenbaum's amazing performance, showing vulnerability, gratitude. He wants to do the right thing. And he's coerced by circumstances and an evil father, superbly played evil father. And of course, Michael Rosenbaum, this is not the only time he would play a DC character, because in the DC animated films that they've been releasing, direct to DVD, he also plays the voice of the Flash. There you go.
Jessica's favourite DC hero. So there we have it. Okay, Jessica, score out of 10, please.
I give this an 8. I really liked it. Not quite as much as the Lois and Lane one we just saw last week, but I still really enjoyed it and do want to keep watching it.
Yeah, or even Lois and Clark. Lois and Lane could be another series. We can actually write it now, which is great.
They're a legal team.
An alternate universe.
Exactly. Kathy?
Okay, I've been thinking about it because obviously I want to give it the highest score possible, but I'm only going to score the episode, and I'm going to give the episode an 8 because there were some things, but I still enjoyed it, and I was captivated to watch the second one, as many of you were, so I feel good about the 8.
All right. Well, indeed, Jared had an 8.4, as we know. I'm also hovering around that 8 mark. Pam?
Wow. Okay, I'm going to give it nearly a 7.99999.
What's holding you back with that point?
I'll tell you what's holding me back. And I'll tell you for why. Robin, I thought you would like that. Because I went on to see what David Nutter would do years later. And he did direct some of my favorite Game of Thrones episodes. And he's just such a an incredible weirdo. That I see what he went on to do. So I feel that I can't in good conscience give it higher than a 7.999999 because it wasn't his best work. And it was still mainstreamy for me, to be honest, even though it was so great. And I lifted the, you know, historical perspective. I wore those sunglasses. So yeah, that is why. 7.99999.
Stephen, are you going to go for a recurring decibel lumber plate, or are you going for a solid number here?
I'm going for a solid number. I'm going for an 8. I'm taking away 2 points from giving it a 10 because I really can't stand the Whitney character at all. He's the one character that ruins the episode for me.
Yeah. Well, it's all the lightning, obviously. That sort of has all kinds of impacts on the electricity. Jenny?
I'll give it 7. I think, did I give the one last week six? And this is better than last week, so maybe I'll give it seven.
Mm-hmm. The one that actually...
She just said a seven, y'all.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's crazy. She just said a seven.
I'm feeling generous.
Meteorites will be falling, I've no doubt. Robin, what's your score?
Well, based on this episode only, not where it goes from here, I would go for an eight because it's an extremely efficient, well-acted, engaging pilot that hooks you in and makes you want to watch more, as we've proved here tonight. So, solid eight.
Well, we're staying with the Superman mythology for a third part next week as far as... Superman and Lois is actually concerned, and an interesting switch there in a show which again is even more current. But even more current than that, we're putting together a special bonus show for Resonance Rewind, considering a BAFTA award-winning documentary called Navalny in the very near future, which will be coming through. And Kathy will be there, hopefully the rest of the team will be there as well. For the moment though, to Jared Palmer earlier, to Jenny Bill, to Pamela Sue Mann, to Jessica Burtis, to Stephen Pierce, and to Kathy Manso and Robin Pierce. And also, good luck, Graham. Hopefully you're well. Graham's had to actually take a bit of time out because he's had to attend a funeral in France at present. So that's the reason he's not with us tonight. But we send best wishes, obviously, to Graham and Bernadette Harper. But as we always say, keep on resonating.